Shri Shri Guru Vacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Bhagavan, Lord Shiva. Api also. Tat, that. Shrutva, hearing. Rahasya, smiling. Agadadhi, whose intelligence is unfathomed. Ripa, O king. Tushnim, silent. Babhuva, remained. Sadasi, in the assembly. Sabhyaha,
everyone assembled there.
Cha, and. Tat anuvrataha, followed Lord Shiva, remained silent. So, translation. Srila Shukadeva Goswami continued, my dear king, after hearing Chitraketu's statement, Lord Shiva, the most powerful personality whose knowledge is fathomless, simply smiled and remained silent, and all the members of the assembly followed the Lord by not saying anything. So you can repeat. Srila Shukadeva Goswami continued.
My dear king,
after hearing Chitraketu's statement,
Lord Shiva,
the most powerful personality,
whose knowledge is fathomless,
simply smiled
and remained silent.
And all the members of the assembly followed the Lord by not saying anything. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Chitraketu's purpose in criticizing Lord Shiva is somewhat mysterious and cannot be understood by a common man. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, however, has made the following observation. Lord Shiva, being the most exalted Vaishnava and one of the most powerful demigods, is able to do anything he desires. Although he was externally exhibiting the behavior of a common man and not following etiquette, such actions cannot diminish his exalted position. The difficulty is that a common man seeing Lord Shiva's behavior might follow his example. As stated in Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, text 21, Yadyada charity shrishtas tatadi vaituro janaha siyat pramanam kurute lokastat anuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common man follows. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. A common man might also criticize Lord Shiva like Daksha, who suffered the consequences for his criticism. King Chitraketu desired that Lord Shiva cease this external behavior so that others might be saved from criticizing him and thus becoming offenders. If one thinks that Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the only perfect personality, whereas the demigods, even such demigods as Lord Shiva, are inclined to improper social affairs, he is an offender. Considering all this, King Chitraketu was somewhat harsh in his behavior with Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, who is always deep in knowledge, could understand Chitraketu's purpose, and therefore he was not at all angry. Rather, he simply smiled and remained silent. The members of the assembly surrounding Lord Shiva could also understand Chitraketu's purpose. Consequently, following the behavior of Lord Shiva, they did not protest. Instead, following their master, they remained silent. If the members of the assembly thought that Chitraketu would blaspheme Lord Shiva, they would certainly have left at once, blocking their ears with their hands. So, Sri Shukravacha Bhagavan Api Tatshutva Parhasya Rahasya God Adir Nipa Tushnim Bahuva Sarasi Ashuyas Cha Tadanu Gretaha. So, Omaganaha Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tasma Tat Pasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there's several things to be learned from this verse and purport. It's actually quite an interesting, important verse and purport. One is etiquette. One is how to behave, even if one is on a higher platform of devotional service. So, of course, according to the etiquette, Chitraketu was like a friend with Lord Shiva. When one is on, let's say, an equal level, not that he was equal to Lord Shiva, but when one is, let's say, the godbrother or something like that, then you can criticize your godbrother, of course, in the right circumstance. Chitraketu did make the mistake of criticizing him publicly. That is a violation of the etiquette. However, for him to criticize Lord Shiva or correct Lord Shiva was not wrong because he was a godbrother. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he spoke sometimes about his godbrothers in not so complimentary ways. Prabhupada told us it wasn't all right for us to do the same thing. He would correct us if we actually started to criticize his godbrothers because that's not the right etiquette. So there's a question of etiquette. And Prabhupada's criticism of his godbrothers was done not out of envy, as Chitraketu's criticism of Lord Shiva is not being done out of envy, but it was done to protect us. This is brought out very nicely. I've been reading a book where some of his godbrothers have been talking about just telling remembrances of his divine grace to the Prabhupada, their interactions with him. And it's interesting that most of them were really supportive of his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada's mission. However, they weren't understanding all the aspects of Srila Prabhupada's mission, and therefore what they could have said to Prabhupada's disciples would have been very confusing to many of Prabhupada's disciples, because Prabhupada's disciples were very new in Krishna consciousness. Of course, there were some that were opposed to Srila Prabhupada's, let's say, buying land in Mayapur, to Srila Prabhupada's taking the name Prabhupada. I mean, there are, definitely were some like that. But there were also many that were actually quite favorable and loving and close with his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, like Sridhar Maharaj and others. I'm not going to get into that whole controversy. But Prabhupada, in the final days, he told them that I had to do this criticism or had to criticize just to protect them, because these were just very, very new devotees. I mean, all of us, basically, were all new, young devotees. And our devotional creeper was very, very fragile at that time. Very, very fragile, and we were open to confusion. And so many devotees got confused because they associated with Prabhupada's godbrothers, etc. And we see that so many devotees who went to Radha Kund, or so many devotees who took association with others who were more advanced in devotional service, for one reason or other, they got very confused. So that was a particular circumstance. In any case, it's not our right to criticize Prabhupada's godbrothers. It's just not our right. So we should be observing this etiquette within ISKCON too. That if there's some criticism, let's say, of someone in a superior position, we have to follow the proper etiquette in criticizing and correcting the person. It has to be done generally by a peer. So Chitraketu was a peer, and there's nothing wrong with what he was saying. However, he should have said it privately, because what do we have? Yadati pratigranati guyam akyati prachati. Guyam means like secretly or privately. So one reveals his mind privately. Because if you say these things publicly, just like nowadays on the internet, there maybe is some bona fide criticism of different devotees, but it's being said publicly. I mean, they go overboard. Obviously, we could all use correction. But Prabhupada actually said that if we are like sticks, that if we're by ourselves, we can be broken, and if we're in the association of devotees, then we can actually... It's like many sticks together. You can't be broken. So it's very important to keep the association. And so we should be ready to take instructions from others. I mean, I remember one godbrother we were trying to instruct and or just advise, I wouldn't say instruct, and said, isn't there any place for spontaneous devotional service within the ISKCON? And I was explaining, there's a place for spontaneous devotional service within ISKCON. However, not to show it to everybody. Even if you are on the spontaneous level, you should be rising from mangalarti. You know, this also involves the whole topic here of setting a good example. You know, I was advising this devotee, you know, you should rise from mangalarti, set a good example of sadhana, and not be up till midnight, 1 o'clock every morning, just like displaying ecstasy with the devotees. And, you know, so it was my right to give him that, I'm not saying who it was, to give him that advice, because even though he may or is or whatever is on my platform of devotional service, there's the example he has to set. And we were also talking about example. It was interesting in regard to a recent festival in Mayapur. Recently there was this festival called the Kirtan Mela, which some of you may have seen on the internet. And one thing that some of us observed, and some of the GBC observed, not in a harsh, critical, envious way, because we all enjoy the chanting of the holy names of Krishna, but they would go up to real late at night at mangalarti, not so many of the people would be there. So there was emphasis on, you know, late night ecstasy. And I've seen that as time goes on, I'm not going to say as the movement progresses, but as time goes on, there's more and more emphasis on the late night thing, and less and less emphasis on the morning program. So we were discussing this on the GBC conference in regard to the Kirtan Mela, which I said nobody's criticizing the Kirtan Mela. It's you know, simply wonderful. Everybody's absorbed in Krishna's name. That it sort of sets, the way it's set up is it sets an example that Srila Prabhupada really didn't want set. And then I pulled some quotes out from Srila Prabhupada's Vedabase, where Srila Prabhupada emphasized very, very much about rising at a certain time of the morning. And Prabhupada made that practically like a regulated principle, you know, rising early. Of course, if one's out preaching ecstatically, I understand, but if it becomes an everyday affair, and then mangalarti, you don't see people, or if people at least are not rising in their own homes, then it's really not following the sadhana process. You know, sadhana process, of course, is meant for sadhana bhaktas, especially those on the Vaidhi platform. The Vaidhi platform means rules and regulations. So even if one happens to be on the Raghunuga platform, Prabhupada was very specific, and also Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very specific, that one has to set a good example. Even if one is on a completely spontaneous platform, one has to set an example, because of what Krishna says in the Gita, which Prabhupada quotes in the purport. He says, yad yad acharati shrestas tat tat evetaro janaha. He says, as the leaders of society, I mean the exemplars of society, shrestas, as they act, and actually Prabhupada even used this in regard to George Harrison, not in regard to George Harrison's sadhana, but he said, George Harrison, you're a shrestha, you know, you're actually a leader of society, so other people are chanting Hare Krishna because they're following you. Of course, it's not that we follow George Harrison's example of sadhana or lifestyle, but Prabhupada was using that example to illustrate how people follow others. And so, anyway, so in this verse from the Gita, it says, tatad evatro janaha, that the common people follow. And so, generally, this is how society works, that people follow examples in society. Many of us, of course, joined the Krishna Conscious Movement because we were very much inspired by Prabhupada's example. Of course, this is called the role model, where you have a specific role model, example, or someone you want to be like, or someone you want to emulate. This is important to understand this, how society functions, that people have this dynamic of copying or following someone who they really appreciate, love, want to emulate. And so Srila Prabhupada, even though Srila Prabhupada was on the highest platform of devotional service, or is on the highest platform of devotional service, acted perfectly in the sadhana realm. You know, Prabhupada was even more than perfectly. Prabhupada was waking up at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I remember in Mexico City, and I told this story when we were at Govardhan, that the devotees were out, some ecstatic preaching in Cuernavaca one night, and then they came back like at 12, 1 o'clock, and nobody woke up from Mangalarti. And Prabhupada was there too. Nobody woke up except for Prabhupada. And even... I don't even want to mention, but anyway, one of the sannyasis was there who was at GBC, and he even didn't wake up. And so Prabhupada came down to see who was in Mangalarti, and it wasn't anybody. I don't even know if the Pujari was up, or the Didis were up. So Prabhupada got extremely angry and said, no matter what, you have to get up at that time in the morning. So talking about the morning program and how important it is. So this is a discussion we had on the internet in regard to the Kirtan Mela. And so my suggestion was that they should start the Kirtan Mela at 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, what's the problem with that? Is there any problem with starting at 4 o'clock in the morning? I don't think so. And then Mangalarti should be part of the Kirtan Mela. And Guru Puja should be part of the Kirtan Mela. Not that at 10 o'clock in the morning the Kirtan Mela starts. So anyway, a little criticism, healthy criticism, of course, which I'll certainly get accused of being a harsh critic. So, so as far as what Lord Shiva was doing, he had the right to do it. I mean, Lord Shiva has the right to drink poison, he has the right to smoke ganja, he has the right to have his wife sitting on his lap while he's giving Bhagavatam class. He has the right to walk around naked. Because he's Lord Shiva. And of course, in Sanskrit, having the right to do something is called adhikar. It's interesting that Prabhupada gave, and in the Vedic system, those people who get married are called das adhikar, right? Like purva das adhikari. That means you have the right to have a wife. You have a license. As Prabhupada said, there's a license. And das is given a license, like one is given a license to drive. But it's not an unlimited license that you have a right or a license to drive at 100 miles an hour to 30 mile an hour zone. So in the same way, when one gets married, one has a specific right to be in the association with the opposite sex, but it's not an unlimited right or unlimited license. So this concept of adhikar, or having a specific right to do certain things, is a very important concept in the Vedic system. And also in ordinary etiquette, as we mentioned before, like Prabhupada had a right to criticize his godbrother. So even in the material sphere, as well as in the spiritual realm, there's consideration of a person's rights. Of course, there's also responsibility. You know, you have to balance the two rights. Isn't it interesting? You have rights and responsibilities. So in the United States, or the law of the United States, we have this Bill of Rights, which gives us a Bill of Rights, which gives us some rights, like you have a right to free speech, but you also have a responsibility not to misuse that right for free speech. One example of that is that if you go into a crowded theater and you yell, what, fire, that's not your right. We were talking about that in Mayapur, where the temple was so crowded that basically we were pressed up against each other. And one of my godbrothers said, truthfully, I mean, it's a good point, he said, if anyone yells fire here, people are going to die, because there'd be a mass stampede. So they were discussing how there has to be more exits for the temple, because otherwise it's going to be a disaster sooner or later. So in other words, it's a right, but you have a responsibility to use that right properly. So Lord Shiva he has this right. I'm not saying whether he was doing something irresponsible. He certainly wasn't, because he's almost on the level of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he has a right to do these things. I mean, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, we have Ramananda Roy, who had a right to teach the Devi Dasis, the girls, young, beautiful girls, how to dance, had a right to basically touch their bodies and dress them and do so many things. And he was on that level of devotional service so that he was able to do these things without having his mind disturbed. And Prabhupada said, actually Lord Chaitanya said, that he's the only one with that right. So if the rest of us try to teach the dancing girls, of course we don't have any dancing girls, but, or let's say if I want to have a Bart Nacham class and teach the girls how to dance, it's not my right. Be kind of foolish, be on the internet the next day, you know, Facebook, be a Krishna Maharaj, you know, teaching dancing girls how to dance. But, so anyway, so Ramananda Roy had that right. And other people don't have that right, including Lord Chaitanya even said, of course Lord Chaitanya is God, but he was acting to set an example. He said, I don't have that right to do that. He said, even if I see a statue of a lady, you know, the mind becomes influenced like that. So he said, I think I myself very renounced, but Ramananda Roy was actually the most renounced person in Krishna consciousness as far as the example is concerned. So we find in the writings of the Acharyas different injunctions for different stages of devotional service. Like if one reads the Jiva Dharma, you hear basically people being given their spiritual identity and, you know, what they do in the spiritual world, etc., like that. And one may think that they can imitate or emulate these particular pastimes or instructions, but we don't have the right to do that. That's brought out also in the Jiva Dharma in several stories. There's one story about a Babaji. Actually, his name was Nittai Babaji, if I remember correctly, or Nityananda Babaji. And he was a very young man. And he approached an older Babaji, who was about 100 years old. And he said, you know, what is my stage of devotional service? Am I a Kanishta? Am I a Majjhima? Or am I an Uttama? And of course, this older Babaji, feeling ecstasy when he was first asked that question, he said, you have the name Nityananda, so you must be the topmost devotee. But the younger devotee said, seriously, I want to ask you this question. You remember the story of the Jiva Dharma? He said, seriously, I want to ask you this question. You know, really, tell me. And then the older Babaji said to the younger Babaji, tell me your story. It's interesting because we should be approaching older devotees or more mature devotees and more advanced devotees to try to understand what our adhikara or rights are. You know, it's not that we can decide it ourselves, because, you know, if I had to decide my right myself, you know, I would think that I'm on the highest platform in devotional service. I mean, I had that interesting story when I was a new devotee. I thought, you know, I was a coward boy. When I first joined the movement, myself and the other brahmacharis would be reading the Krishna book, and we'd read about the coward boys, and we looked at each other and said, we must be coward boys. And of course, that was simply illusion, because we didn't have a right to think like that at that particular point. So getting back to the story. So the older Babaji says, you know, tell me about yourself. And so the younger Babaji begins to tell this whole story, his life story. He said, look, I was married, and somehow or other my wife died at a young age. And I was feeling some, as they say, smarshana vairagya, but he didn't use that term. That means renunciation at the crematorium. Obviously, if something happens, right in front of you, you get very renounced. I mean, just like yesterday, we visited some devotees. We're on the way back from the airport, and we visited Lalita Krishna. And, you know, just seeing his state caused us to feel very renounced. But then as soon as we got home, we thought, wow, let me enjoy some nice prasadam. So, isn't it? Certain things we come across evoke a state of renunciation, but that state of renunciation is not necessarily permanent. That's why the term smarshana vairagya, renunciation of the crematorium, is used, because that means that people talk about spiritual life, just like in Fiji. They have this thing, Ram Nam Sachahe, that they chant at the funerals, which means the holy name of Ram is the truth. But if you chant it any other time, they're not so much into it. So this young man said that my wife passed away, and then I felt so much renunciation, I took the Babaji order of life. You know, just thought, this world is miserable. But then, he said, I started to get attracted again, especially, you know, to members of the opposite sex. You know, I started to feel some agitation. He didn't use those words, but it's a paraphrase. And then, fortunately, I had the association of a great Vaishnava, and by his association, these impure, demoniac thoughts and tendencies went away. But still, he revealed to this older Babaji, I'm still, when I exhibit symptoms of ecstasy, I want people to appreciate me for them. And so, you know, he asked this older Babaji, you know, what is my position? And the older Babaji said, you have taken sannyas prematurely, or taken Babaji at that particular point prematurely, but fortunately, you had the association of a great devotee. And because you're admitting your faults, which is that very important too, for a devotee to be able to be introspective enough to admit their faults. You know, it's very easy for me to say, I have no faults, you know, I've never thought of any illusory thing. But we should maybe not openly, in public, but at least to other devotees, revealing the mind and confidence. Dadati pratigrinati guyam akyati prachati. That means confidence, not only hearing confidence or giving advice in confidence, as Chitraketu should have done, but being ready to reveal our minds when we're actually either struggling or become aware of different anarthas that we may have. Because if you're not aware of the anarthas, then you're really not going to make progress in devotional service. I mean, that's why we need, also Jayavadharma points it out, that even though jnana is not necessary for advancement in devotional service, sambandha jnana is. In other words, understand, because if you don't have sambandha jnana to understand, and abhideya jnana, that means, sambandha means knowledge of the Lord, one's relationship to the Lord, and abhideya means basically knowledge of your position in devotional service. What should you be doing as you advance in sadhana bhakti and the other process aspects of devotional service? Then you're not going to progress. You're going to become misled in devotional service. So what this younger Vaishnava did was very, very important. So anyway, so he reveals his mind, and the older Vaishnava says, you're fortunate, you were saved, and now you're on the platform of Madhyama Adhikari. So Madhyama Adhikari. Of course, we understand from the Acharyas that Madhyama Adhikari has different levels. It's not that there's only one level of Madhyama Adhikari. But he also was pointed out that if you're not careful, even if one goes to a higher level, one can fall down by bad association. It's not that, you know, I've gotten a level of Madhyama Adhikari, and, you know, that's it. I'm safe. You're not safe until you get Krishna Prema. So by bad association or bad thoughts or contemplating sense objects, one could fall down. So it's very, very interesting. So in this particular point, that was his adhikari, to function on the level of Madhyama Adhikari. And we find this in many places in the Jayavadharma. It's not only the people who realize that they're gopis or coward boys, but they're actually seeking honestly to understand, oh, what is their adhikar, what is their right in devotional service and what are their responsibilities in devotional service. So anyway, so these are some of the, I think that's all the points I want to bring out. Yeah, I think that's it, and we can open it up for questions now. Apurvaji, get the microphone.
I'm glad you mentioned about this culture that's developing late-night programs.
Yeah.
Last summer, my wife and I were visiting Detroit, our old stomping grounds, and we were doing different programs. And generally, the programs start about 7 o'clock. The lectures start at about 8 o'clock. And then by 9:30, they're serving prasadam.
Ah.
And we're also doing that here in some of our programs. The consequence is people just... they don't have a morning program. Or at best, there's a morning program, one-to-one devotees, who a husband and wife preaching center, and their morning program is, what I notice, because I was there for their job, but they're just falling asleep chanting japa.
Mm.
And this program of eating late at night,
It's not good. I mean, sometimes when preaching to the congregation, I mean, just to balance that, when they're not actually like, when they're just coming to Krishna consciousness, sometimes it is necessary to stay up late with them. And I'm not decrying that particularly. You know, sometimes there has to be a strategy. I mean, Prabhupada did stay up late preaching sometimes too, but not on a daily basis. You know, sometimes on the weekends, when, you know, we have these bhakti vriksha programs, it may be necessary to stay up a little later, you know, 9 or 10. But not to have, I mean, I've been in people's homes where they don't take prasadam until 10 o'clock at night, and then the kids are going wild to 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, that's too much. I mean, you know, for ourselves as preachers, sometimes it is necessary to participate in these things, but not on a daily basis, because you've got a congregation that's accustomed to that. Whereas dealing with the devotees who are just like full-time devotees or Mayapur, there should be more of a stress on the morning program because people are there already. You're not dealing with a congregation that's, you know, 30, 40, 50 miles away and you got to travel back late at night after the night program. So there has to be a balance, because Prabhupada certainly did. When it was necessary, the Pando programs were late at night. So Prabhupada certainly did that, but not as a daily basis. And Prabhupada always woke up early. And one could rest during the day. You know, if you're too tired, I mean, I would definitely have to rest during the day. I don't do it on a regular basis. I mean, tomorrow night I'm going to some program. It's not going to be that late. But, you know, I'm doing that because it's necessary. But it shouldn't become a standard in ISKCON, in the internal part of ISKCON. Yeah.
And one of the things that we need to do, and we do in our program, is emphasize sadhana to the people that are preaching.
Yeah.
That, you know, really, Krishna consciousness shouldn't be seen as entertainment. It may be entertaining in the kirtan, but it really involves sadhana. So what we do is we always try to emphasize beyond Friday night, beyond Saturday night, whatever night we're doing the program, there's a day-to-day activities, and it involves, you know, getting up early and chanting around, et cetera, so that people kind of know the standard.
Yeah, that's good. And in New Zealand, they started a once-a-week, you know, Mangalarti program where they're getting, they just started that, where they get like 200 people or something like that coming to the Mangalarti. No, they have a bigger temple, of course, than we couldn't accommodate. So it's good to try to inculcate that in people, the importance of rising early. Prabhupada did emphasize that quite a bit. But, you know, dealing with new people, sometimes we have to be, you know, a little bit slack in, as far as the staying up late. I mean, because otherwise we wouldn't be doing any preaching. As far as our bhakti vriksha preaching, it's mostly done at night during the weekends. But it shouldn't be a standard, and especially amongst our young people, I see this happening. You know, the young people in Krishna consciousness, and people, anyway, you'll see them in the evening, but you won't see them in the morning at all. We're not talking about programs, we're just talking on a regular day-to-day basis. So it's...
Look who's in the room.
What's that?
Everybody in here is over 60, practically.
Yeah. But there are young people in the community who can be. I mean, there are who are watching. I mean, right now we probably have, I'm not going to look, probably have about 20 people watching. So, I mean, if someone's at home, I understand. They can actually get up early and have a program. Prabhupada actually wanted that for people who stayed at home. Prabhupada didn't expect everybody, he was a grahastha, to come in the morning and then have to go to work. But he wanted them to get up and have their own little program in the morning. And the japa is so much more potent, and the attention is much more easy to maintain in the early morning because of the mode of goodness. Okay, on that happy note,